This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Yes, this may have caused a bit of tension. We should never ever be projected as a government which is not caring. There's no government, there's no civil society. We are South Africans and we're holding hands together.
That is the Defense Minister of South Africa on complaints of abuses by security forces enforcing the COVID-19 lockdown. Details coming up. Also, refugees in Uganda fear possible food shortages after the World Food Program reduced their monthly ration by almost a third. And the DRC's healthcare system needs urgent support as it struggles with measles and cholera and the COVID-19 pandemic. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, we start with our top story. Nigeria's lockdown order has had very painful side effects, emboldening criminals, sparking protests, and leading to deadly crackdowns by police. Gift Agariga has the details.
Nigeria, Africa's most populous nation, fell quiet as the government's stay-home order was extended by 14 days as part of efforts to defeat the COVID-19 disease. In a broadcast Monday, President Muhammadu Buhari said restriction of movement will continue as long as scientific advisers say it's needed. While the president said there will be palliatives to cushion the effects of hunger during the lockdown, many citizens have decried the process as a peak that appears to be a sham. Hoodlums are seizing the opportunity to unleash terror on citizens. Neighborhoods are under siege. And the National Human Rights Commission said it has documented 105 complaints of incidents of human rights violations by security forces, with 8 extrajudicial killings leading to 18 deaths. It said that is higher than the death toll from the virus. Shiraju Olarunwaju is the chairman, Human and Environmental Development Agenda. He says the government has failed to understand the lockdown's social and economic implications.
In the absence of any concerted effort on the part of the state government and the police force, you are sure that you will see the worst of this situation, because these guys are going to be more emboldened to do more than they've been doing before now.
Olarunwaju suggested the inclusion of civil society organizations in the process of the distribution of the palliative measures to ensure it gets to the most deserving people.
There's been no clear definition of who are the beneficiaries. There's no clear publicly available means of sharing of these palliatives. There's no involvement of independent people who can assess the progress, evaluate the achievements and the impact, and then give feedback to the government.
Tension due to hunger, lack of money, and closure of the recreational places and businesses are compelling Nigerians to defy the lockdown order. Some have taken to the streets to protest. Residents say they are more worried about starving than they are of contracting COVID-19. A commercial taxi driver, Emmanuel Ocharifu, lamented how uneasy the situation has become.
I have found it so difficult in the past few days to feed myself and my family because we have to rely on the day-to-day activities. As it is now, my matrimonial duties have suffered a lot of setbacks. You must eat to have energy to smile at your wife.
The Lagos State Commission of Police, Hakim Odumosu, said the police have adopted robust patrolling around the neighborhoods in an effort to tamp down the rising crime, yielding many arrests.
Not only the police, the military men we have brought in, the Navy, the Air Force, but under the leadership of the police. Tension is already high. Don't want anything to escalate it. Patrol is 24 hours.
He urged residents to stay calm as government ensures that aid gets to them. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
South Africans have been left furious after soldiers killed a man in his house for allegedly breaching COVID-19 lockdown regulations. The incident follows several allegations of abuse against the military and the police since the lockdown started on the 26th of March. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The death of Collins Khoza in the hands of the military has ignited anger from South Africans. It is alleged that the military entered Khoza's home during a lockdown patrol in the Alexandra township in Johannesburg. They assaulted him severely after finding him with a glass of beer in his hand and having a beer bottle in his fridge. Khoza's wife, Nomsa Moncha, explains how he died 3 hours later. She says he just lay down on the floor without moving. Suddenly he made a movement, opened his eyes and squeezed her hand. That was his last breath. A string of videos have surfaced on social media showing the military and the police frog-marching civilians and forcing others to roll on the ground. In another incident, they assaulted a family for having a braai or cookout in front of their house inside their yard. A woman victim, who did not want to be named, says she was left emotionally hurt and physically bruised.
I fell on the floor, they were pulling me, the one woman kicked my head, the guy was pulling me, scratched me, but I was literally on the floor.
Pretoria resident Elijah Shai says that's the last thing they expect from the country's protectors.
We're fighting against COVID-19 to save lives. And here we are taking lives away again. People being killed in their own houses, in their own yards. It's very unacceptable, honestly.
And the Minister of Defense, Nosiviwe Mapisa Ngqakula, is angry too.
Yes, this may have caused a bit of tension. We should never ever be projected as a government which is not caring. There's no government, there's no civil society. We are South Africans and we're holding hands together.
The government has loosened some of the lockdown regulations to allow some businesses to incrementally resume their operations. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
South Africa's 21-day lockdown presents an unusual challenge for a nation with the world's highest burden of HIV. In order to remain healthy, those on antiretrovirals need to venture out of their homes for their life-saving medication, a move that puts them at greater risk of contracting the highly infectious coronavirus. Some healthcare advocates are seeking a workaround in the form of automatic pharmaceutical dispensaries, much like ATMs, where patients would be able to get their pills without human contact. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
South African hospitals are busy preparing for a coming storm of coronavirus cases, which officials expect to peak in September. But as they stare down this pandemic, they're also dealing with another, even bigger one. South Africa has the world's heaviest burden of HIV patients, with at least 7.7 million cases. Its government also runs one of the world's largest free antiretroviral programs. So how, in this age of lockdowns and strict social distancing, can these vulnerable patients stay safe from a new viral threat? Enter the pharmacy ATM. South African nonprofit Right to Care unrolled the innovative program in 2018 to give patients with chronic illnesses a quick virtual consultation with the pharmacist, followed by dispensation of their medication, all in under 3 minutes. In normal times, the program saves patients the inconvenience of waiting in long lines at government clinics. But during this new pandemic, it could save lives, says pharmacist Taffy Chinamora.
The interaction between a patient and the healthcare professional is minimized, is very minimal. It's more or less virtual from the patient point of view because it's via an audiovisual link. So interaction, so the spread of the virus is limited because there is no person-to-person interaction because we're using audiovisual link. We're using an ATM pharmacy to dispense medication to patients.
The program's managing director, Fanny Hendricks, says it could also lift a burden off the nation's hospitals. Patients can get 2 months of medication at a time.
In a time like this, it's important that we decant our chronic stable patients from our overburdened facilities to make way for the side effects of the pandemic.
The program has 5 locations in South Africa, most of them in high-density urban areas in Johannesburg and the city of Bloemfontein. Most are inside shopping malls, which, under South Africa's strict lockdown conditions that only allow essential trips outside of the home, also minimizes the number of trips patients have to make. Hendricks.
We've seen a rapid increase in patient numbers at our ATM pharmacies. One of the main reasons for this is just remember that these ATM pharmacies are situated in community shopping centers. So in a period of lockdown, patients can easily align the collection of their chronic medication with their monthly or weekly shopping. And also the ATM pharmacies is open 7 days a week. And already we are open 80 hours more per month than the public healthcare facilities.
The program is busy collecting data on how many new patients have entered the program. But they say every single patient they can help contributes to the larger fight against the coronavirus pandemic. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
There's help for South African seafarers who have been unable to return home because of COVID-19 travel restrictions. The South African Maritime Safety Authority says it's working with the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, DIRCO, to repatriate its nationals who work at sea.
To date, around 140 people, some of them sailors, fishermen, cruise liner and oil rig workers, have made contact with the South African Maritime Safety Authority, or SAMHSA for short. Deputy Chief Operations Officer Vernon Keller says they're stuck in various places around the world. On the African continent, five oil rig workers are awaiting repatriation in Accra, Ghana.
They are ashore, they are in a hotel. They have made contact with the consulate and they are trying to see if they can charter a plane to get home.
Keller says they've already had some successful repatriation missions.
A couple of them have already come back from Brazil. We've had a couple come back from London also. We're discussing with government how we can best track who, when and where. Because at the moment they're just tracking flight details. So we're obviously finalising that arrangement so we can see exactly of the list of people that we have, how many we've actually successfully repatriated.
Keller couldn't confirm reports of a COVID-19 case on an oil rig with South Africans on board, but says there have been lengthy negotiations to get a cruise liner worker quarantined off the coast of England back home.
He's not allowed to come home at the moment. Because they've quarantined everybody on board the vessel. There was an actual outbreak of COVID on the vessel. So we don't know if they've all been cleared yet, but we know that this particular South African has been cleared. There's been no case associated to him. So the idea is to help make arrangements to eventually get him off the vessel. The UK has already acknowledged that there's no restrictions because of the fact that he's not showing any symptoms and that sort of thing. He should be able to come home at the next opportunity.
Keller explains that once on South African soil, anyone who's repatriated won't be able to socialise with their family and friends for at least 21 days.
They will obviously be screened on arrival at the airports and stuff like that. So it will be the normal process. And then after that, they'll obviously have to go into quarantine. Depending on where they get quarantined, they may go quarantine at a quarantine facility, or they may be told to go home and be self-isolated at home kind of thing, and then just every now and then give an update on their condition if it deteriorates.
He explained what seafarers have to do if they want to come home.
The best way for them to get repatriated is obviously to make known that they are wherever they are, to tell us what the conditions are that they are being, where they are stuck otherwise, and then to also register with the embassies. And then obviously what we do from our side, if they let us know, then we'll also liaise with DIRCO and as well as their companies to try and arrange something for them. They can also contact our welfare officer. His mobile number is 079-885-1590.
That number again for the South African Maritime Safety Authority's welfare officer for seafarers stuck at sea is 079-885-1590. This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
Refugees in Ugandan settlements are in fear of a possible food shortage after the World Food Program reduced monthly food and cash rations by almost a third. The World Food Body says the reduction is because of reduced funding in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
The World Food Program, WFP, says they need $219 million to sustain the funding needs of over 1.3 million refugees in Ugandan settlements. As of now, the agency is short by $137 million. Lydia Wamala, the WFP Uganda spokesperson, attributes the funding shortfall on donor countries shifting funds to fight the coronavirus. Titus Jogo is the Adjumani District Refugee Desk Officer. He says the WFP, together with the UNHCR and Office of the Prime Minister, agreed to cut the rations to sustain the feeding of the refugees.
Because of the coronavirus, of course, WFP did not get enough money. Food rations are going to be reduced by 30%. Also, no cash, also reduction by 30%.
He says information about the food cuts is being released among the refugee communities. Each refugee family member had been getting 12 kilograms of maize or sorghum and 2 kilograms of beans. Those on cash rations received 31,000 Uganda shillings, or about $9. Proskovia Aikoru is a South Sudanese refugee living in a Gojo refugee camp in Adjumani district. She is worried of the risk of hunger since the food cuts have coincided with the lockdown that bars them from moving out of the settlements as a measure to fight COVID-19.
That food cannot take you up to 1 month. As for now, we are restricted to do anything. The movement, what we are suffering. We have shortages of food. When we are freely, people can look other things, they can carry firewood and do other things and get money so that they can add other items. But now, since we are stopped on that, we have challenges.
Uganda ranks among the countries in the world with largest refugee populations. Most come from South Sudan, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Burundi, among other countries. Uganda's president on Tuesday extended a stay-home directive for 21 days as measure to fight the coronavirus. The government also has barred the entry of new refugees as part of that effort. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
According to the United Nations Children's Fund, the Democratic Republic of Congo's battered healthcare system needs urgent support as it struggles with measles and cholera epidemics that killed thousands of children, as well as the mounting threat from the coronavirus. Since early 2019, a measles epidemic, the worst in the world, has killed more than 5,300 children under the age of five, and there have been more than 31,000 cases of cholera. Mavis Ochera in Ghana has more.
Measles cases in the DRC surge over the past year to reach 332,000 nationwide, making it the worst outbreak in the DRC's history. Out of more than 6,200 reported fatalities, around 85% were children under the age of five. In a recent report, UNICEF said that ongoing efforts to contain the Ebola outbreak in the eastern DRC have diverted attention and resources from already enfeebled healthcare facilities dealing with several deadly endemic diseases. Simon Ingram, the report's author, says the fight against Ebola in the DRC has overstretched the country's health resources and has led to a drastic drop in immunization rates. He says attention now may be diverted to combating the spread of the novel coronavirus in the DRC, which may affect efforts to contain other endemic diseases.
Unfortunately, that has the effect of taking away resources from the basic health infrastructure of the country and efforts to fight against other diseases, including measles and cholera and malaria. So we saw a drop in immunization rates, for example. And unfortunately, it looks like we're seeing the same thing now with COVID-19. We're seeing that as attention focuses on fighting that virus, there is also a fall off in attention to keeping routine immunization work going against other diseases.
Engram says many people in the Democratic Republic of Congo live in congested cities and slums. Those conditions make it difficult to practice the social distancing and good hygiene needed to stop the spread of COVID-19. He says the DRC, like many other African countries, lack the needed medical resources to protect its people from COVID-19.
DRC is a large country with open borders and with large population, something like 84 million people. It's going to be affected just like everywhere else. We have every reason to be concerned, as indeed WHO and other agencies have spoken several times, to say they are very worried about the long-term implications of COVID-19 in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
He says the government must allocate more of its budget for healthcare services supporting pregnant women, newborns and young children, and to prioritize the strengthening of routine immunization. Currently, an estimated 3.3 million children in the DRC have unmet vital health needs, while across the country, 9.1 million children require humanitarian assistance. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Oshry in Drassu in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
A survivor of the COVID-19 virus in Nigeria says it can infect anyone irrespective of class or age. Professor Jesse Otgebayo has tested negative twice after contacting the virus and has been discharged. Otegabayo is the chief medical director, University College, Hospital Ibadan, Nigeria's premier university. Otegabayo spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye about his experiences as a COVID-19 patient. He advises eating a balanced diet to boost the immune system and take preventative measures to avoid contacting the disease.
I got infected with COVID-19 infection during one of our quarterly board meetings in the hospital. A member of the board took ill and tested positive for COVID-19 on screening. During contract tracing, three of us tested positive, and I was one of them. I was asymptomatic throughout, and I tested negative twice while in self-isolation.
What was the experience like during your treatment, and how long did it last?
My experience during isolation was that my spirit was high, and I knew that there was nothing wrong with me other than the positive result. The only problem was that of the isolation and loneliness and the feeling of incarceration, because I had to stay in one room, and this lasted 8 days before the second negative result came out.
Some Nigerians still believe that COVID-19 is a sickness for the rich and wealthy. What's your reaction to this?
COVID-19 infection is certainly not a disease of the rich. The reason that it may falsely appear so is because the rich usually are the ones that have the wherewithal to make the necessary connections to check their health. They are very much aware, and they subject themselves to test readily. Secondly, because of the lack of resources in this nation, things are skewed towards the rich. So, as we know that the test kits are not readily available, it's only men of influence who are likely to be tested. And of course, majority of the poor people lack the insight to know that this disease is something that they have to take seriously. As many still believe that it's a hoax, they believe that it is artificial and that it is not real. But those who are on the rich side tend to want to keep alive, to enjoy their wealth, and therefore they are more sensitive to their health than the average poor. The idea of what the poor count as important is means of survival, which centers mainly on food. But the rich, apart from food, now looks for long life. I believe, in my own opinion, those are the things that makes it look like it's a disease of the rich, or the testing is skewed towards the rich.
What advice do you have for Nigerians on how to build your immune system and how to prevent contacting COVID-19?
My advice to Nigerians on how to build their immune system is to ensure that they take a balanced nutrition and take some supplements that are known to boost the immune system. One of them is high dose of vitamin C and other minerals like zinc and selenium. Of course, taking balanced diet alone, that is highly nutritious diet, boosts the immune system.
That was Professor Jesse Otegabayo, Chief Medical Director, University College Hospital in Ibadan, speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And on behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington, thanking you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.